Yes, sir.
Hello, WGN listening audience.
Live from the biggest small town in America, it's the Saturday Night Special with Amy Goode. Get ready for the Saturday night.
WGN. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us this evening. So you know what? We tackle a lot of topics here on the Saturday Night Special, and some of them are really heavy, and some of them are really light. And somehow, I don't know how, but somehow, the lighter topics, or what we think are going to be lighter topics, often end up being the subjects with layer after layer after layer to uncover once we get started talking about them, talking with our guests and learning from their expertise. On that note, June, as it turns out, is National Aquarium and Zoo Month, and it's World Ocean Day on June the 8th. That seems fun. That seems light, right? Well, sure. I thought that that seemed like a fine thing to celebrate and a very simple and straightforward topic. But looking into work being done in this space, suddenly programs and people and data started to emerge. Programs and people doing fascinating work far beyond what we might see when we're gazing at wildlife when visiting a zoo or aquarium. So for most of us, places like that are just about the only opportunity to see most animals, beyond household pets anyway, right up close. And while definitely it's not always easy to see these majestic creatures in captivity while imagining their wild counterparts running or swimming free, the world is changing. Habitats are changing, and as habitats are changing, animal populations are changing too. And so next to education, conservation is a key mission for just about all zoos and aquariums. It's estimated that over 175 million people visit U.S. zoos and aquariums each year. And that popularity, their popularity anyway, is growing as more people learn to appreciate and value what these facilities add in terms of conservation and education. Lincoln Park Zoo, for example, is one of the largest zoo-based conservation and science programs in the country. And their conservation and science department does a lot, and I mean a lot, as many zoos do, for wildlife conservation around the entire world, far, far beyond just here in Chicago, but the entire world, including identifying a range of threats to wild populations, forecasting through population data, and creating strategies to ensure that animal populations in peril at least have a shot. Not surprising, it's us, humans, that pose the biggest threat to most threatened and endangered animal populations. We wreck natural habitats, we chop up their land to stock our lumber yards, we pollute their oceans. But there are plenty of pretty easy things that we can do to help them out, and we don't need very much money or time to do them, just the inclination. So tonight, we'll talk with Dave Bernier, who is a general curator at the Lincoln Park Zoo, about his work, about things going on behind the scenes at the zoo that are extremely cool and super simple adjustments that we can all make to our shopping habits to help wild habitats around the world. We'll also journey to the West Coast tonight to talk with Sally Compton from the Oregon Coast Aquarium about conservation efforts there, addressing the unique needs of wildlife in coastal areas. And we'll talk with a local entrepreneur named Romney Cirillo of Something Fishy, Inc., an organization that has designed a new program called Mobile Aquatic Therapy. It brings beautiful and relaxing and joyful aquariums full of bright and cheerful fish to children in hospitals, many too sick to get out of bed, even children that can't receive human visitors. It's pretty great. So we're going to talk to him about that. So tonight on the Saturday Night Special, it's all about connecting with wildlife and the people who do work in this area. So we'll be right back to get the conversation underway here on 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth. And this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us this evening. As ever, we take one topic and we talk about it all night. And as I said in the opening monologue, it's often the topics that seem really light and straightforward that ends up, we learn a whole lot in those episodes because, you know, we go in thinking, like in this one, it is National Zoo and Aquarium Month here in June, and June 8th is World Ocean Day. And I thought, oh, we'll talk to people about creatures. This will be fun. Lots of people doing cool stuff here in Chicago. And as I started digging and started talking to people and started interviewing people this week in preparation for the show, I realized there's way more going on in this space than any of us realize. And so I brought some really interesting people together this evening to talk about that. Here in a little bit on the other side of news, we're going to hear from someone from Lincoln Park Zoo who has, and I spoke to him a little bit earlier, so I had to record it because working at the zoo is a busy thing. He's a busy guy. So we recorded it a little bit earlier. But you hear me in the conversation with him. I say, you have the coolest job because animals are so much better than people most of the time, which is a real thing. Imagine like you're around animals all day and you know, and he's doing all this cool conservation stuff to help them. And so I think that's so interesting. And, you know, he really pointed out something in the interview that he's talking about. One of the biggest challenges he has is there's a disconnect between, you know, we grow up going to zoos and we see giraffes everywhere and gorillas and all these wonderful creatures. And he said, but how few there are actually out in the world. It's hard to translate that. When you've seen giraffes in zoos your whole life, it's kind of tricky to imagine, you know, and he said, and it's hard to convey that to a visitor. You're there to have a good time. You have little children with you. And it's hard to say, oh, see this beautiful gorilla. There's only 200 left in the world. And you know, and I started looking up numbers of animals after I talked to him. And it's really stark. Like one of the most endangered creatures, it's a type of leopard because they have really beautiful fur. And so people want their fur for, you know, for decorative stuff. There's 70 left.
Wow.
I mean, that I was like there. I think there's more than 70 people that work here. Right.
Yes,
I mean, that's
for sure.
And that's so that's stuff like that that makes me like, whoa, time out. We're messing this up. And, you know, the more I was reading leading up to this week, everything pointed to one thing. The number one thing destroying oceans and habitats and creatures. It's us.
Yeah.
We're the worst. Humans are the worst.
We're terrible.
And here's the thing, you guys. You don't have to go all like PETA and Greenpeace to fix it, right? We don't. There's little bitty tweaks. A few of them are in this interview that you'll hear here on the other side of news. Just like tiny things that you can do just with your shopping habits. That one of them I had never even thought of that I thought was really, really useful. It's about the type of oil that you buy and why. So there's little tweaks. It's just like flip that can or bottle around and be like, does it say this? Nope, not going to buy it. Easy. Done. Super easy things. So, you know, I think it's a matter of like getting into this because I have been walking around thinking, oh, I care about the environment and I care about creatures. And I think I love to visit, you know, zoos and aquariums and see these gorgeous creatures doing their thing. And I secretly want to have a pet otter because they're real cute on Instagram. They're so cute.
Oh, my gosh.
They make a terrible noise. If you follow any of the otter Instagram accounts, though, they're so adorable. But the babies especially make this noise like, you know, that like the dolphin noise.
Uh-huh.
Imagine that as a prolonged screech. Like, you're cute. But I'm going to need you to bring it down a notch.
That's
like
an unusual pet you want to have, Amy.
I know. It'd be really fun, though. They're so darn cute. I mean, I like all little furry creatures, but also like, you know, big, beautiful, you know, whales and dolphins. And I just think that's so lovely. And so the more I read about them, you know, you think, oh, their population is threatened. Oh, no. When you read, like, there's 70 of them. Oh, no. It's not threatened. Like, they're almost gone.
Yeah.
That could be wiped out. And, you know, and so the more I was reading about it's on us. We're wrecking their habitats for food additives and mm-hmm. preservatives that grow in the wild and for lumber. And we got to do better.
Yeah,
we got to do better. You know, even the simple act of like sustainable seafood. I was going to talk to somebody tonight from the Shedd Aquarium. Unfortunately, that did not end up working out, talking about their sustainable seafood program because they have a really cool thing. But nonetheless, no hard feelings to anybody at the Shedd. If you go to their website, they have a cool thing. They have like a series of dinners that are like an educational series all about sustainable seafood that I think is pretty cool because then you can go and like all right, what is it I need to cook and not cook? And how do I cook it? What do I do? Or let's have this fancy night out that's actually doing, you know, some good in the world.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
I think it's really cool. But but this is one of those topics that, you know, sometimes we take really deep, heavy topics here on the show, and it seems like, oh man, there's so much there. But then, you know, once you lay it out, you get all the voices together and you have this conversation, and it feels great to talk about it. But this is one of those topics that totally blew my mind as I was researching it throughout the week of, you know, I think I thought I knew a lot about this. I knew nothing. I could say at the end of every show, I know nothing. I'm the vessel. People always go, people that give me good feedback, which is not across the board. Some people don't give good feedback, right? But people that give good feedback say, oh, I learn a lot listening to your show. How do you know so much stuff? It's like, I know nothing. I'm curious too. Like, I just go digging into stuff going, hey, I wonder what that's about. And then I go, oh, I want to tell listeners about that. That's fun. So to me, it's like this journey of let's learn stuff together, because I know nothing. I don't know anything. I'm the vessel, for real.
Amy, I didn't even know that it was Zoom month.
Yeah, it's Zoom month. I follow a lot of weird Twitter accounts.
So I learned something new today.
The weird holiday websites, they are a wealth of topic inspiration.
There you go.
For all broadcasters. You can go, what is a weird, you know, what is a weird holiday today?
Just Google that. What is a weird holiday today?
Okay, so there are some really strange ones that I found through the years going to weird holiday websites. We're going to go off topic for a second. Then we're going to come back to the creatures that need us. One of them was something like, shout insults at Cobra's Day, which is literally the opposite of what we're talking about tonight.
Do cobras even have the capability of hearing?
I don't know. I doubt it. I doubt it very much. I mean,
that holiday's a waste.
That holiday's totally
Google it.
Right. So there's that one. There's one that I thought was so hilarious, and I was telling a friend about this who's actually from Vermont and knew about this, that it is a real thing. It is you sneak a zucchini onto your neighbor's porch day.
Why?
Because in certain parts of Vermont, there's just a bumper crop of zucchini this time of year, or that time of year. It's like later in the summer. And people have so much zucchini, they don't know what to do. And
so it's supposed to be an act of giving, of generosity.
It's an act of giving, but you're supposed to do it in a funny way. Like, write something with zucchini, or build a person, or, you know, I thought that maybe it was a euphemism. It's not a euphemism. Uh-huh. It is actually, you just put a stack of zucchini against someone's door, so when they open the door, it'll fall in on them. You know, and I was like, what a ridiculous thing. He goes, oh no, my friend was like, oh no, it's really fun. Don't knock, like, he got all offended.
No. He was all, don't knock it until you've tried it.
Yeah, he was like, don't hate on Zucchini Day. I'm like, well, whatever.
I mean, the Greeks love Zucchini Day because we have like fried zucchini in Greek restaurants.
Your people have delicious food. Is what I'm here to. We're so far off topic. We took a right turn at yelling insults at cobra snakes.
But let me just tell David one second. Cobras can hear, by the way. So I just Googled it.
They can?
They can hear. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so it's not a waste to yell insults.
Yelling insults at cobras
could
be highly, highly so dangerous. I mean, it's like, what did you just say to me, pal?
Oh, right.
Like, a little closer.
Cobras have a bad attitude. They're like, what?
Let's talk about
what'd
this.
What'd you say? Come here and say to my face.
Yeah. Let me give you a little venom as a parting gift.
They're better at sensing vibrations instead, though, just so you know, David.
FYI. I was like, don't tell
FYI.
Me. FYI. Yeah. So there's that. We're so far off the rails. I had it all ready to talk about, like, why we're really being terrible to animals today and the things we're doing. I mean, you know what? Another one that kept coming up, though, to bring it back to this topic, is not just us wrecking habitats, like with deforestation, like chopping down all the trees and things like that, and making it impossible for animals to live, or like isolating them, because we're like shrinking their environments and they can't run in herds, whatever. It's plastic in the oceans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've been trying for years to like break my plastic habit. I don't know how to do it. Ziploc bags are just good.
And they're very durable, too.
I admit, I do wash out Ziploc bags.
Oh, my gosh.
It depends on what's in them. If it's just like a couple of carrots that I bring to work.
That's fine.
Well, some companies have made some changes in that regard. If you can see the cup that I'm holding up.
I cannot.
Well, it's Dunkin' Donuts, and they used to have all the styrofoam.
Yep.
They've switched to paper.
Okay, I'm on board with that. I mean, I have like those.
And they're one of many that have started to make that kind of adjustment, because so many of the stories that we're seeing, they found plastic products in the Marianas Trench.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, we're wrecking things.
Which is a really long way for plastic to go.
Right.
But they've got that plastic sort of habitat that's in the middle of the Pacific somewhere.
It's all bad.
Yeah. They're just finding plastic in the internal organs of animals.
Oh, yeah. That's such
a
big
fish,
one. And
fish, which we consume.
I was reading about this and that some of the smaller plastic particles as it starts to break.
Microplastics.
Yes. Some animals mistake them for a small food, like plankton. As they're eating plankton, they're ingesting it. So it's getting into their bodies. Then either we're eating that creature or it's killing them. It's real terrible. So, you know, not a PETA Greenpeace show tonight. We're talking with some people doing really cool things in this area. One, we're talking with somebody after at 8 o'clock who, this is real cool. He is bringing mobile aquariums into hospitals to visit children who often can't get out of bed or can't receive human visitors. This is really cool. We're going to talk with him. We're talking with, after this news break, we're going to talk with someone from Lincoln Park Zoo. It's a pre-recorded conversation I had with him because zoo people are very busy, as I learned this week. So we're going to talk with him about the very cool job that he has. Very cool job. I think I told him that 3 times in the interview. And then a little bit later, we're talking with somebody from the Oregon Coast Aquarium because there's some really unique challenges and specific efforts going on with a coastal aquarium that is a little bit different than what we do here. So that's what we're doing tonight. Now that we're back on topic, we're going to take a break here in a sec and get you to news, all that good stuff. We are talking all about oceans and aquariums and wildlife and zoos and all that cool stuff tonight. And throughout the show, we're going to be sharing a bunch of links with some simple stuff that you can do to not go out of your way, not spend a ton of money, but just some easy stuff that you can do to help our creature friends in their natural habitats. So back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. So on the other side of news, we are going to be talking with someone from the Lincoln Park Zoo about some, I'm telling you, there are cool jobs out there. I thought we were doing pretty well here, but then you hear from someone who works at the zoo and you're like, okay, that's a way cooler job. That's pretty cool. So we're going to be talking with him about cool, cool things that Lincoln Park Zoo is doing around the world to help endangered and threatened animal populations. It's going to be really cool. Stick around for that. WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, inspired by National Aquarium and Zoo Month, which is June, and World Ocean Day on June 8th, we're talking tonight with lots of people who do really, really fascinating things in that space. So first up is a conversation I had a little bit earlier with Dave Bernier, who is a general curator at the Lincoln Park Zoo, which means the coolest job I've ever heard of. He does a lot of cool things. He works not just here in Chicago, but does effort and looks at data and does stuff to help animal populations around the world that are threatening extinction or that are really, really close to doing so. So let's take a listen to this conversation that I had with him a bit earlier. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do at Lincoln Park Zoo.
So I, as a general curator at Lincoln Park Zoo, I oversee all the animal care department, which includes the 4 curators that oversee the animal areas. And we've been doing some really exciting things this spring. Probably people have noticed from our social media and from media in general that we've had some major births at the zoo. We've had 2.2 red wolves born, and that's kind of insider speak for 2 males and 2 female red wolves born on April 13th. And this is really an important birth for us and for the red wolf species survival plan, because there's probably estimated around 30 or less red wolves left in the wild. And this is a critically endangered species, and we've been working with them for many years in order to try to support the population. We also had on Mother's Day a male western lowland gorilla born to the zoo, another critically endangered species. And he and Mom Raleigh are doing very well at the Regenstein Center for African Apes. And people can usually see mom and baby on exhibit during the day. We've got partially screened off exhibits where she can get a little private time, but she's not shy about being out and about in the exhibit. You can see her. And we also recently had a male Eastern Black Rhino born on May 19th, another critically endangered species that we've been working with for a very long time, an important bird for the species survival plan as well. Rhinos are poached very heavily for their horn, and their populations have been taking huge hits in Africa and Asia as well. This particular species is African species. And we're very happy to be able to support the captive population in order to promote the welfare of this animal and also its plight in the wild. And if people want to support the expert care that we give our animals at the zoo, not just these guys, but all of them, they can go to our website and they can look at our adopt or our wish list section of the zoo.
I want to adopt them all. I want to get all of them.
Yeah, I know. Me and my kids, too. Yeah, we've got a few adopt animals laying around the house.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you know, you touched on something I think that is so important to really highlight. You know, we think about, you know, the zoo being just the place where we go to visit animals and we take our kids and our families and we go and we see all the creatures and marvel at them and they bring us joy to go and see them. But it's such a bigger effort. There's so much going on behind the scenes. And that conservation piece, I think, is so important. And yet it seems so daunting and overwhelming. You know, we hear about populations of these creatures that are endangered, and we see numbers of what's left of them in the world, and it seems so overwhelming. How do you even tackle that when it's, you know, worldwide such a huge problem? How do we tackle that just right here with our population of animals at Lincoln Park Zoo?
Well, I think it starts with just working with the species survival plans for the animals that are housed in zoos. We want to be able to make sure that we are contributing to really strong populations that will survive for a very long time. We work with the Population Management Center, which is also located at Lincoln Park Zoo. It's part of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And they help managers of over 500 species be able to make sure that they are making recommendations for breeding and for transfer of animals in order to support really strong genetic populations. So in the zoo world, that's one of the major things that we do. But we also, what we've done at Lincoln Park Zoo is really we've gotten a global reach. And we've been trying to go out into the world, the larger world, either with local conservation or with some conservation work we do in Africa, in order to help promote on-the-ground conservation, not just what we can do in Chicago, but what can be done by local people in communities in order to support some of these endangered species as well.
You know, there's so much cool stuff on the website for Lincoln Park Zoo. I think a lot of people probably just, you know, head there and go, okay, what time are they open? Here's the stuff I need to know. What's there?
Right.
But there's so much cool data. And there's the zoo risk index. It's so interesting. And all these cool data points. And it's all about population management. Talk about that, if you would.
So I have some experience with that because it's more of our conservation science department to be able to speak more fully to that. But I also help, I'm a species coordinator for two different species at the zoo. So I understand that with zoo risk and other software that the Population Management Center has, that they help us be able to kind of project into the future what our population will need in order to be strong and viable 100 years out or 10 generations out, and helps us make decisions now about breeding and transfer of animals in order to ensure that population is strong going forward. So there is a lot of different tools available to animal managers and also to people that manage animals in the wild, too. Like with our Puerto Rican parrots, we've been helping to model populations and work with them as far as their breeding and release programs in Puerto Rico for this endangered parrot species for probably close to 10 years and with some really good success.
That's so interesting to be able to forecast kind of when you're looking at, okay, are we doing enough to serve this population and the crisis they're in now so that we can help rehabilitate them? And you mentioned there are the two animal species that you work with. Which are those?
I am the SSP coordinator for the Sichuan Tahkim, which is a goat species. It's a very interesting animal you see at the zoo. They're beautiful. They're very large goat species. And then also the southern three-banded armadillo, which is a small mammal that you would see at our Regenstein small mammal and reptile house.
What is the biggest, I mean, I think the answer is probably human beings, but I'm guessing, but what is the biggest threat to both of those populations?
Yeah, both of those have vulnerable wild populations, and you're right. The number one threat is habitat loss for both. Hunting for the armadillo is probably number two. But habitat loss is a major concern, and part of that is people moving into spaces that they haven't lived in before, or trying to farm or be able to use forested areas or other areas for economic needs, which is something that the zoo has been working with in Central Africa with our researchers in order to kind of work with forestry companies in order to sustainably harvest and work in those areas where chimpanzees and gorillas live in order to make sure that we're leaving habitat for them and being able to coexist with them as opposed to just kind of coming in and taking trees out.
That's a conversation that I was having a little bit earlier with Dave Bernier, who's the main curator at the Lincoln Park Zoo. What an interesting job. And you know, just in that brief time and in that the beginning of that conversation, learning so much from him about what the Lincoln Park Zoo is doing, which I think is so cool. We think about the zoo being just right here in the city, but so many zoos, what I learned from him was so many zoos, including Lincoln Park Zoo, are doing projects around the world to help animals, which I think is really cool because all of the animals in captivity have a wild counterpart. So we'll be right back to hear part two of that conversation that I had with him right after this break. Here back in a second on 720 WGN. WGN. I was like, what is this? Oh, from Tarzan.
Yeah.
Good call on that one. I was like, what in the world? That sounds like real strange Genesis, old school. I don't know. Yeah, but that's from Tarzan. There
get it
is.
Strangers like me.
I get it.
Yeah.
That's with the theme. You're very good at picking like good songs to match with the theme. And that theme tonight, we're talking, inspired by National Zoo and Aquarium Month, we're talking with all kind of cool people doing really cool things in that space. And so just before the break was part one of a conversation that I had a little bit earlier with Dave Bernier, who is the main curator at the Lincoln Park Zoo, which is, I now believe, one of the coolest jobs I've ever heard of in my life, because he's doing things to help animal populations, not just care for the animals that are at Lincoln Park Zoo, but to care for their wild counterparts out in the wild around the entire world. It's so cool. If you go to the Lincoln Park Zoo website, you can read about some of the cool programs they're doing in Tanzania and just around the world. It's really cool. I recommend you do so. And that was a thing, I learned from him, that so many zoos we think about, we just go there and we see those animals. But in fact, most zoos are huge educational and research facilities and doing so much for conservation, especially while so many wild habitats are being threatened for these creatures. So let's listen to part two of that conversation. When we talk about endangered populations and when we talk about conservation efforts, what in your experience and given your expertise, what do you feel like people miss the most? What gets lost in that conversation?
I think when they see animals in zoos, they're enthralled by them and they understand the value of them a little bit more. And what we're trying to do is connect them with these animals. I think it's hard to equate like what the pressures that they're really under when they're in the wild and how small these populations are. Take, for example, giraffe. There have been giraffe in this country for, over 200 years, and people see them in zoos and they've seen them. And then when they think of a zoo, it's one of the five animals that probably pops into their heads. But in Africa, their populations are really starting to be affected by their fragmentation of their habitat, where they're being isolated more. And so I think it's hard to get that message across to people that a lot of the animals that you're seeing, their wild counterparts, are under a lot of stress. And we don't want to overwhelm people with a message like that, because we want to be able to show people how beautiful the animals are and that they have a lot of value. We want to generate empathy for those animals so that hopefully people will make really good choices in their own lives about sustainability practices, which will take pressures off of the habitats of animals where they live, so that they will have spaces to live and be able to hopefully grow and recover.
Yeah, you're right. That is a tricky one, because, people go to the zoo and they want to do fun things and see animals and usually have little children with them. But yet it is important to share that message. So what is, in your mind, what is the key to getting more public support around issues about conservation and protecting endangered and threatened species?
I think engagement is really important. we try to engage not just people on ground, but try to engage people in the community. We know that we have about 3.6 million visitors every year, and they come from Chicago and all over the country and all over the world. And we would like them to understand that the plight of the animals are, and then take some information away with them about what they can do in their lives. You know, what kind of actions can they take to make things better? And then even these little things that people do, if they really can add up over time, especially with our visitorship, that we might be able to make an important impact for these animals.
And what are those things to do over time? You know, we think about, okay, recycle. I don't run the water while I brush my teeth. And you think about those kind of things. But when we're talking about something endangered on the other side of the world, I think it's hard to make those connections. What can people do from here to start making that difference and make good choices for animals that are threatened?
Yeah, there are a few things that I would recommend that people could do in their lives every day. You know, one of the major things that places in Africa and South America and Asia, they're trying to use wood sustainably, and people can buy products where sustainable wood is used. Will really help bolster that part of those economies, and will take away from some of the logging that happens that isn't sustainable. Same thing with palm oil use. Palm oil is used in a lot of different products, from food to probably cleaners and a lot of other things. And palm oil is one of those areas that people farm, and they take away habitat from animals in order to grow palm. But there are sustainable practices, and people sell that sustainably. And what we try to do is hopefully in at the zoo and also in our daily lives is try to avoid those products that are not sustainable products and try to use products that are sustainable. So you're starting to see more labeling of those kinds of things and steering away from the non-sustainable products. Same thing with seafood. We participate in Seafood Watch, and we ask people to think about seafood when they go to eat and try to pick sustainable seafood items in order to take the pressure off some of these fish populations that are really being hunted and overfished so that they can have a chance to survive as well.
Yeah, those are all very doable things. That's not something that you need millions of dollars to do. That's not something you need to necessarily even leave home to do. That's just stuff you can keep in your head as you're shopping, because as we all know, we vote with our dollars indeed.
Correct. Yes, it's a powerful tool.
Yeah, right. Definitely. Well, I appreciate you taking time to talk with us tonight. This is really interesting stuff. So where can people go to find out more, and how can they just have a more educational experience while they're at Lincoln Park Zoo?
Well, you can definitely go to our website, which is lpzoo.org. And like you said before, there's a lot of great information on there. Some of it's fun. Some of it is might boggle your mind a little bit. It's the kind of a science that we're doing in zoos and around the world to help endangered species. And also information about how you can help at home.
Definitely. And I totally encourage people to go do that, because just looking around the website ahead of calling you, there's so much interesting stuff. The Tanzania Conservation Science Program, Urban Wildlife Institute, so much cool stuff that's happening there that I don't think we see when we stroll through the zoo. So very cool stuff.
We don't. And the zoo's website's a great place for that. We try to use some of our programs on grounds, like some of our chats, in order to bolster that information about what's really going on behind the scenes. We have a lot of science centers at the zoo and a lot of scientists working diligently on things that the public, when they come to the zoo, may not know about. But Lincoln Park has really reached out, and they have a global impact now. And I'm really proud to be part of the institution for that reason.
I'm sure. You have such a cool job. You get to hang with animals all day. That's way better than people.
I do. I can't wait to come to work every day. I love it.
Oh, I bet. I bet it's so cool. Well, we'll make a point of saying hi next time we're all at the zoo. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
That was a conversation that I had a little bit earlier with Dave Bernier, who is the general curator at Lincoln Park Zoo, which means he's in charge of all the creatures, which is such a fun job. It sounds like such a cool gig. But, you know, I would like to note I learned many things from him. But one thing, if his voice sounds familiar, he's been on WBEZ, Curious City, all that. But he has been on WGN several times. He used to be on with Milt Rosenberg a lot, who really gave me my start in radio. So I got nothing but love. for anybody who knows about Milt Rosenberg and appreciates him in that way. You know, what's also really interesting, Linkin Park is, there's some renovations happening with the zoo. There's some, or expansions rather, there's some cool stuff happening. I think it's like a three to five year long project that's underway. Part of it is the park itself. Part of it is the zoo. Part of it. So we can expect to see more and more from them. But what I thought was really interesting, you know, we hear a lot of like lumber, sustainable seafood, sustainable lumber. The palm oil one, I've heard about it, people not loving palm oil for health purposes. That was really interesting. And after I talked to him about that, and he said, you know, if you can avoid palm oil, it's in a lot of stuff, but if you can avoid it, that's going to help a lot. I went and looked it up and did some research. He is so spot on. It to get it is really hurting a lot of, or to get it in natural habitats anyway, where it's not like from done in a sustainable way from a facility that's just growing that to get that palm oil. It's really harmful to habitats, and it's so, and it's in so many things that it's really, really hurtful. Of course, it's in Nutella. So,
oh no,
we're gonna have to address that.
Oh no, what did you just tell me?
I know. I was like, well, that changes things up. So.
Oh,
I know. I was
man.
Like, well, what all is palm oil in? Yep. It's fare thee well, Nutella, until you can get your act together and not use palm oil and be destroying animal populations. But apparently, like the store brand version of it, not quite the same, but it doesn't have palm oil in it. Like the Aldi brand of it, it's okay.
Oh.
It's all I can afford anyway. It's fine. It's the Aldi one. It's fine. Nutella's like $4. I don't have $4. Got to get that dollar.
$4.
Dollar.
It's like $6.
Yeah, right. That's how long it's since I bought it.
Because I have a coupon, maybe it's $4.
At Aldi, it's like $1.99. So it's way more doable and doesn't have palm oil. So I'm on the right track.
There
with
you go.
That. So there's that. So there's lots of small things to do. There's lots of also a lot of resources out there. I'm going to be tweeting some of them a little bit later on. I've been tweeting about the program tonight and linking to Linkin Park Zoo's Twitter. You should follow them. They're always tweeting about their new zoo babies and all that cool stuff. Great folks over there doing cool stuff. But we're going to take a break and go to news here in a little bit. On the other side of news, we are going to be talking with someone who's not in the zoo space, not in the aquarium space in the sense of the aquarium like a place, but the aquarium like the object, the item, the living habitat. And he's doing a very cool thing to bring aquariums, because they're relaxing, they're beautiful. They, you know, if you're lonely and you got your fish right there, it's beautiful. It's like very chill to have your fish around. But he is bringing mobile aquariums into children's hospitals because some kids can't get out of bed to see them. Some kids can't even get human visitors. It's really
horrible. So sweet.
But to bring these bright, happy, beautiful aquariums into them. So we're going to be talking with him. He's local. He's right here in the Chicago area. And he has a company called Something Fishy Inc.
I love that title.
The fish puns.
I love it.
I bet
it.
He had so much fun coming up with the title. I bet he did. Okay, so on the other side of news, we're going to be talking with him all about the work that he's doing that's really, really cool, bringing lots of joy to lots of kids, I'm sure. And I hope many, many more. So back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. WGN. And now, how does that song relate to wildlife?
I just really like this song.
I was like, wait a minute. Okay, you had the Tarzan song. You had some like world beat earlier. And I'm like, oh, okay, I don't get it. I just got
to
say.
I just had to get myself back up because you said Nutella had some oil that, you
palm
know.
Palm oil.
Yeah,
palm oil. It's killing all of the animal habitats and making everybody it's bad.
Yeah,
humans are terrible. Nutella makes us worse, even though it is extremely delicious. That's what I know. I know. All right. But on the other side of news, we're talking with someone who's doing something so cool for kids that are in the hospital and cannot get visitors and cannot, you know, sometimes they're isolated for, you know, their immune system is down, things like that. We're talking with someone who brings fish tanks in to visit kids in the hospital. It's so cool. It's such a cool thing that he's doing. And then after that, we're going to talk with someone from the Oregon Coast Aquarium because there are very unique challenges to habitat restoration and conservation efforts when on a coast. So we're going to check in with them, with our friends on the West Coast. But that is all coming up on the other side of news.
Under the sea,
Vivian, I knew you were going to play that. When you said, wait until you hear the song I got teed up for this one, I was like, I bet it's going to be that Little Mermaid song. But I'm not going to say that.
You know that so well.
I knew it. I knew it. Well, it fits with the theme because inspired by National Zoo and Aquarium Month, which is June, and June 8th being World Ocean Day, I started looking around for people in this space doing cool things. And that is when I met our next guest, and that is Romney Cirillo, who has a company called Something Fishy Inc. It's a fun name, and what they're doing is so cool. I had to bring it to you because it is such an interesting idea, and it is all, well, I'm just going to say hi and let him explain it to you. Romney, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, so talk to us about Something Fishy and this cool mobile aquarium.
Yeah, so our company, being a aquarium service company in Chicago, would be within a lot of hospital settings. And while doing larger systems within those hospitals, we, through talking to staff, found that there unfortunately were children in children's hospitals that we were in that wouldn't be able to get out of their room due to their medical conditions or immune systems. And we decided that why not bring something to them? And that's where Mobile Aquatic Therapy was created, which is a state-of-the-art hospital-grade mobile aquarium that can basically travel to wherever it's needed most.
And for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I just tweeted out a link to this so you can see it. It's this bright, beautiful, colorful, happy thing that comes, that can, you know, be placed in any room and moved around the hospital wherever it is needed. And you know, the therapeutic aspect of it is very interesting to me because, you know, we think about bringing any kind of creature into a hospital, and we think about a dog, but they can't go into they can't interact with every person in a hospital.
Yeah, for sure. And for us, we didn't even realize that as we were developing our product that we were basically getting side by side with that service that's already out there, which, again, like you said, is dog therapy, which is AAT, which is assisted animal therapy, which is obviously mainly a lot of dogs. Believe it or not, though, some companies do small horses and small farm animals that can come into the hospital setting. But for us in our program, it's great due to the fact of, obviously, that some of those restrictions for animals coming into spaces, our system obviously being well wrapped and covered on a medical side is able to be a lot more versatile.
And that's so interesting. And so I understand that you have created sort of a personality that goes along with this aquarium.
Yeah. Yep. So, again, obviously the aquarium itself is the showstopper and the whole point of the program. But for us, you know, being creative as our parent company name, Something Fishy is, we really like to think outside the box and offer just a lot more within the program than just an aquarium. So for us, it was exciting to make a connection with the kids and have it be relatable. And that's, of course, where a mascot has to come in, right? So with the program name being Matt, we rightfully so named him Matt, and Matt is 70% aquatic and 30% human, and he is a character that we will implement into coloring sheets and activity sheets, and just for a way for us to tie it in and make it really engaging for the children as they're enjoying the aquarium in their rooms as well.
And as you have, and this is still a fairly new project, but as you have been rolling it out in children's hospital areas, what has that feedback been like? Is it at first kind of, well, this is something so different, or is it, I would like to think anyway, that pretty much right away, this is something exciting and visual for kids.
100%. You know, we took great pride in taking our time and developing it to make it look the way it does, which, you know, it's hard for anybody not to, you know, turn heads, whether it be doctors or staff, nurses, child life, even just the people that are in and out of a hospital on a daily basis. But it really goes one step further for everybody to get a lot of excitement when they see it, and then to realize, oh my gosh, this is an aquarium that's just rolling down the hallway. It really brings it up to that next level.
That's so fun. And I think that would be such a joy, you know, to see something like that, especially in that environment. There's so much fret and worry going on there. And also, you've taken a lot of care, it seems, to, in its construction, not only have it meet hospital standards for you know, a hospital grade equipment, but also in sourcing the materials to make that reef inside of it.
Yeah, that's where we've had a lot of fun. And like you mentioned, our company really painstakingly worked on the outside to stay up to code with infection control and the powers and be that keep the hospital safe and you know, to the standards that are required. But for us, it's also important in line with what you've been talking about already tonight to be ethically on an environmental level responsible. So the inside that makes it look so colorful, of course, besides the fish themselves, are custom artificially made inserts. So one of our manufacturing partners is Poseidon Construction out in California, and I'm sure a lot of people would recognize their work as they've done things in places such as Rainforest Cafe, T-Rex Cafe, and Disney World, but we work really closely with them as it's a cube-shaped aquarium, and that insert was made specifically for the inside of the aquarium. So it really fills up almost every nook and cranny to really give that depth and that excitement of just really when you're watching the tank in a setting, these small reef fish are just swimming in and out of those corals, and it just really adds to the overall effect.
And the fish too. There's, you know, you've sourced those, it seems, in really thoughtful ways as well.
Yeah. So again, just going in line with us finding, you know, trying to find the best of the best within our industry. It was important for us to find something that was also sustainable for our livestock, the aquariums, the animal, the fish that are in it. So ORA is a leading aquaculture facility within Florida, and ORA only breeds they're captive bred fish. So essentially no fish that they are producing is taken from the wild. It's all captive bred, and that's the only fish we're using in our program. And further, that actually really helps due to you know, a sustainability and having a heartier fish. You know, a fish taken from the wild would be, as you can imagine, a lot more stressed in that small of an aquarium and in that type of environment. So these fish, all they know is that space, and they're comfortable and they're happy within it, as we've seen.
And you know, there's so much to be read out there about the benefits of having a water feature in your home, or, you know, for mm-hmm. stress levels and just being able to look at an aquarium and things like that. And, you know, there's so many benefits, and I think children would probably be so delighted to see something like this. In terms of, there's a lot of, and I ask this because there's a lot of business owners that listen to this program and regularly check in and all of that. So if someone is looking to bring something like this into their healthcare space, what kind of costs would be associated with this? I think mobile aquarium of this size and this something that's beautiful, and I think it would probably be extremely expensive. And so how does that cost work out for the hospitals and facilities that you're going into?
Sure. No, that's a great question. And that's something that we really, for us, had to look at and really make sure we were implementing properly to make it make sense, because at the end of the day, it does come down to budget for a lot of places. So for us, instead of a hospital or a facility needing to outright buy that equipment or that aquarium and everything that goes into it on a constant basis, it was easier for us and for a lot of our facilities already that we're in to see it as an all-inclusive program. So the best way I can describe it to people is just like you would go into a dealership and, you know, buy a car on a lease. This is what we're doing with our program. So as our program develops and generation two, generation three, you know, and so on come out, that facility isn't going to be stuck with one unit that they had to spend a large amount of money up on in front. It's all wrapped into one, so that as the program evolves, that aquarium within their facility evolves. So as we continue to advance that product, they're always going to get the next best thing out there, and they're paying for it as right now at a lease, you know, a monthly based subscription.
Which is, I'm sure, much more doable than buying a very giant rolling aquarium that's so beautiful with all kind of gorgeous fish in it. So we're talking right now with Romney Cirillo, who is the co-founder of Something Fishy Inc., a company that designs, installs, and services aquatic systems here, right here in Chicagoland, but also has created this new program all about mobile aquatic therapy to bring these beautiful fish and these cool aquariums into children's hospitals. We'll be right back in just a bit to continue this conversation on 720 WGN.
Manufacturing is at the heart of our economy in Chicago. As a matter of fact, it's the second largest business sector. Now, we all want to run or manage companies that provide safe work environments and meet government regulations. Luckily, there's a business called U.S. Compliance. It's not a government agency, but they help your company meet the OSHA standards and environmental compliance regulations that you don't have time to worry about yourself. Their goal is to help you keep your workers safe, keep the environment healthy, and make your community a better place. If you're the owner of a small to medium-sized business, or maybe you're the plant manager, or you're responsible for the company's OSHA or environmental regulations, U.S. Compliance is here to make your life easier. They provide comprehensive expertise for a flat monthly fee. They're never going to come in and upcharge you. You know what you're paying. U.S. Compliance has been doing this for over 30 years. Visit them at uscompliance.com. That's uscompliance.com. Or call 888-897-8681. Start spending time on what's going to keep you in business, make you money, and make you happy. It's uscompliance.com, 888-897-8681.
Today, business happens here, here, and virtually anywhere. Because today, innovative companies are reinventing the way business happens. And they need people who can keep up. With the expertise and technology to get packages to over 150 million delivery points. So, who can help you deliver the future of commerce? The United States Postal Service. See why we deliver more e-commerce packages to homes than anyone at usps.com/future.
There's nothing like meeting face-to-face. And there's nothing like Zoom to make that happen. Zoom lets you connect and do business across town or around the world. Zoom ties together all of your communication needs into one easy platform for video conferencing, phone calls, group chat, webinars, and your conference rooms. Connect easily from anywhere, your mobile phone, your laptop, or conference room. Zoom is how business gets done. Get your free account at Zoom.com today. Meet happy with Zoom.
Mix Sundays, your official night tour of the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. Don't let them fool you. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special, and as I said earlier in the program, inspired by June being National Aquarium and Zoo Month and June 8th being World Ocean Day, I started looking around for people doing cool things in that area, and I hit the jackpot. I found all kind of cool people doing very, very cool things in this space. One of those people is on the phone with us right now. Romney Cirillo is the co-founder of Something Fishy Inc., which is, I'm sure we should, I got questions about the name of that, because it sounds like it was so fun to name it. There's so many good fish puns out there, but Something Fishy Inc., which makes this cool mobile aquatic therapy thing. You got to go to the website, just go to fishyonline.com/therapy and you can read about it. You can see this thing. It's real cool. If you follow me on Twitter, you can see it. I just tweeted a picture of it because it's really, really cool. So Rami, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the service and all of that. And, you know, I'm really moved by this story that there you were, you know, working on these fish tanks, servicing them in these big commercial spaces, and that, you know, being in children's hospitals, there were children that were too sick to get out of bed to go see the fish. And there were children that had to be in isolation and couldn't go see the fish. And so you solved this problem. And you know, one thing I love to ask entrepreneurs in particular is, you know, what is the thing that people overlook or get wrong or often misunderstand about the business that you're in? And I would have to think that having an aquarium doesn't mean everyone can see it is a big one. But what else do people misunderstand or that you wish they understood better about the business that you're in and this cool mobile fish device thing? Aquatic therapy unit thing. I just renamed it for you. You're welcome.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. And I'm really glad you asked that question because it does get brought up a lot, just as much as it would in the zoo world or public aquaria space. And that is, how could you and how dare you put an animal into a glass cube or an acrylic cube, as our aquariums are manufactured by Titan Aquatic Exhibits that does large public aquaria, and they've made that aquarium for our mobile, which is acrylic. So it's not glass, which is important in a hospital setting, so sure, it's safe. But either way you look at it, people always are a little bit, you know, sometimes taken aback by the idea.
Yeah.
The good news is, like many in the zoo world, and we would explain, is our industry is obviously pro animal and pro conservation. And our industry, specifically to the aquarium service and the, you know, the sales of aquariums for people, and whether they're home or a commercial space, over the past 10 years has gotten extremely on board and the leaders, if you will, in conservation and making sure, you know, a lot of things are captive bred now, and not just, you know, the businesses, but academic institutions, university, that are doing above and beyond to help this epidemic that we have going on, which is, you know, the bleaching that we're seeing in our coral reefs around the world and global warming and all this. So we're talking coral propagation, which is a huge conversation being had, not even just in our industry, but other industries, to help restore our reefs in the, around the world, which is huge. And again, just even fish species populations and everything else that goes with it.
Yeah, you know, that's been a big theme tonight through you know, as I started diving into this space and looking at people doing work in this space, I think there is very black and white thinking about public aquariums and zoos and things like that, and either it's animal jail or they're free. And it turns out, you know, the more we are harming the habitat that animals live and thrive in, the more, you know, the educational and conservation role that animals in captivity, it's shifting, I think, a little bit. I think people are starting to realize what these organizations are doing in this space and what our relationship to them are, I think, is very different than it was even like 10 years ago.
I think it's really important for people to keep an open mind. Like any type of situation you go into, if you kind of put the blinders on and stick to one opinion or one fact in the matter, it's a lot more, like you said, a lot more to that. There's a very large gray area. It's not just black and white. And especially just, again, Lincoln Park Zoo and Brookfield Zoo, what they're doing to educate the public, it's important because us as a species, we're the leaders in making sure that we do something for this world. And if we don't have those places, it's going to get just worse.
And we're the worst. Like, we've messed it up, right? Like, we're number one, public enemy number one for these habitats. So we
100%.
We owe them that much. Well, so I want to backtrack a little bit back to the, you know, the mobile aquatic therapy that you do, and focus on that therapy piece of it, because that's, I think sometimes it's hard to quantify beauty, and it's hard to quantify, hey, looking at a fish tank makes me very relaxed. But in that clinical setting, in a hospital, what is that? What is the impact of that? And what is that therapeutic aspect and the reach of it?
Yeah, no. So for us, you know, as I mentioned to you, is that we're really just skimming the surface, no pun intended, and getting into this market space. But the exciting thing for us is had a good idea already of where this aquarium could go and the benefits it could offer. But being fortunate enough to collaborate and talk with, for example, one department in a hospital that doesn't get enough attention, I feel, and really should, as they are really the therapy side when it comes to a children's hospital specifically, is Child Life. A lot of people don't realize that besides doctors and nurses, there's other people there at that hospital that are doing a lot to make sure that child's stay is as comfortable as possible, which is a very difficult time. So for them, they've worked with us as that's the department we've been able to work with in that hospital to tell us where these mobile aquariums could be going and where they're being used. So procedure distraction, patient coping, patient therapy, patient activities, which again is where we're trying to provide material so that those staff members, the Child Life, can provide more than just that aquarium, but something that goes with it. And then the most important thing is where we don't look at in a hospital is obviously our number one focus or their focus is on the patient, but let's realize the families that are there, the parents, the siblings, the grandparents, whoever may be visiting that child. They're going through a very difficult time too, and this aquarium can provide a little bit of de-stress and relaxation for them as well. And then lastly, the staff, you know, those nurses and those doctors are working long and hard hours and seeing some very difficult situations. So this aquarium can easily be put into a setting within that hospital for them to benefit as well.
It's such an interesting idea, and I have to think it's such a welcome sight in a room for sure. And so you're in a few hospitals now already. You're still a relatively young company, but in a few hospitals already with great success. And so where can people go to find out more or to contact you if they're interested in having this in their health facility?
Yeah, no, you could definitely find a lot of information and more detail on our program at our website, which is mobileaquatictherapy.com. And then, of course, we're on Facebook and Instagram. On both of those, it's Mobile Aquatic Therapy.
And again, if for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I just tweeted out a link to this so you can see it for yourself and see exactly what the heck we're talking about. It's pretty, pretty
awesome.
Cool. Well, Romney Cirillo, thanks so much for being with us. And we will talk to you again. Keep us updated on this.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks so much, Amy.
Thanks so much. All right, we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth, and this is a Saturday night special. And as ever, we take one big topic and we talk about it all night. Tonight, inspired by June 1st being the start of National Zoo and Aquarium Month, and June 8th being World Ocean Day, we've been talking all about cool stuff people are doing in this space. And we're joined now by Sally Compton, who's the communications and marketing manager at the Oregon Coast Aquarium in Newport, Oregon. Because let's face it, we are here. We have the beautiful Great Lakes here in Chicago and in the Midwest. However, there are some very unique things to conservation and when it comes to being on a coast of an ocean. So that's where Sally comes in to tell us about the cool things that they are doing there at Oregon Coast Aquarium. Sally, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So there's so much going on at this aquarium that's so cool. I encourage everyone to go to aquarium.org and just read about all the cool programs that are happening there. But let's just kind of start at the top and tell us about your organization and the unique challenges of conservation when it comes to coastal places.
Yeah, definitely. So I think the number one thing is that the reason why there's a lot that the aquarium does is because there's a lot that is happening for conservation and specifically marine conservation in Oregon in general. And so as sort of like one of the premier resources in Oregon for marine education and conservation, we feel like it's our responsibility, you know, to be really involved in that. And not only just educating people when they're on grounds at the aquarium, but doing outreach, getting out in the community, whether that's local and throughout the Pacific Northwest, and just teaching people and getting people involved. And our overall mission as a nonprofit is to inspire people to not only just want to see all the different wildlife and animals and really cool things that we have here on the Oregon coast, but also be inspired to conserve it. And so having that be our mission, we want them to leave the aquarium with this overall feeling of wanting to preserve it as well.
And how do you go about doing that? I feel like that's a kind of been a theme of the show tonight of inspiring people to do the right thing and do right by creatures on land and in the ocean. And so what is that balance between having especially young people visiting the aquarium and having a really fun time, but also letting them know that, hey, their wildlife counterpart is having some trouble and needs your help? How do you balance that?
Yeah, definitely. So I would say that there's kind of two types of people that come to a zoo and aquarium. There's the first type, which is, you know, they love zoos and aquariums. They love animals. They love the outdoors. And they're kind of already in the know about what's going on. And so our goal with these people are to, first of all, since they already have that baseline knowledge, we really need to provide something on top of that. And so whether that's the experience that they're having at the aquarium, so making sure that our signage is very educational, our programs are about things that they can do to help the animals that they're seeing, but also providing opportunities for them to get more involved beyond their visit. So whether that's hosting beach cleanups on the Oregon coast, having them get involved as dive volunteers for the marine reserves, getting involved in outreach, so going across the state of Oregon to teach people. These are kind of the people that they've, like I said, they already have that baseline, and so we just want to get them more involved and more kind of on the front lines. And then the second type of person, I would say, is the person that's coming with their family, you know, maybe their friends, and they're just coming to the aquarium because they're looking for a good time. So the aquarium is more represents like an attraction for them, and they're looking for entertainment, looking, maybe they're already visiting the Oregon coast and this was something to do. And so we have to cater to this group of people, kind of be the entertainment for them, make sure that they're having a great time, that they're enjoying the animals, but at the same time instilling this, hey, it's great that you had a great time here and love the animals, but here's what we need to do to make sure that they're here in the future for future generations. And just finding a way that we can connect these conservation issues with people that might not otherwise care about them. So you know, finding ways to relate the information to people in all different kinds of ways is really the challenge of the aquarium, I would say. But it's a challenge that we're definitely up to taking, and we like doing that, especially working in marketing. That's kind of one of the best parts of the job.
I bet. And your facility also is authorized for very specific types of marine species rehabilitation in the Pacific Northwest. Tell us a bit about those, too, if you would.
Right. So the Oregon Coast Aquarium is actually the only facility in Oregon that's authorized to care for endangered marine species. So sea turtles, some types of shorebirds that we have here, like snowy plovers. And then we're one of only three facilities in the entire Pacific Northwest that, again, is authorized to care for these species. So it's us. There's Oregon Zoo and then Seattle Aquarium. And so if there's an endangered species that's in need of care, then kind of depending on where it was found, where it was injured, that would determine where it would go. So we actually are predominantly the main people that are taking in the endangered sea turtles that we get in. So basically what happens is there's green sea turtles, olive ridleys. They're an endangered species, and typically they're found off the coast of Southern California and Mexico. But in changing seasons, changing ocean patterns, currents, they can actually get caught in these harsh winter storms. And because of that, they'll actually get caught on a current that will lead them to the Oregon coast. And because the reptiles, once they're in these cold waters that we have up here, it's about 57 degrees, pretty much all of their bodily functions stop working. And so they're sort of at the mercy of the ocean. They'll get caught in the waves, crash onto the shore pretty severely. We've seen them with, you know, cracked shells, broken bones, and pretty poor condition. And so us being that resource, the facility that can take in these animals, we'll take them in, do all we can to rehabilitate them. And ultimately, our goal is to send them back to Southern California or Mexico so that they can be released. We see a lot of females that this happens to. And, you know, it's really important because when you have an endangered population, just one female that is rehabilitated and released can make a difference for that entire population of animals. And so this is sort of one of the major pieces of work that we're doing with the sea turtles. And then we actually see usually over 300 cases of wildlife a year. And that can be anything from a seagull to an endangered animal like a sea turtle, or sometimes we'll have like northern fur seal pups and things like that.
That was my very next question of how many you see a year. And that's a lot. 300 is a lot of creatures, especially when, as we were talking about at the top of the program, when, you know, a unique challenge that was brought up in a conversation with someone from the Lincoln Park Zoo here in Chicago is if you go to a zoo or an aquarium and you see a creature again and again, it's hard not to make a disconnect between, oh, I've seen this creature my whole life, but its wildlife counterpart, there may not be that many of them left. So when we think, oh, right, 300, but yet, you know, there's 70 of a certain kind of leopard and things like that, that's really, really difficult when you're talking about conservation efforts. So what is one of the most endangered creatures that you get at your aquarium?
So I would say the most endangered that we get are some of the rare seabirds. So like I mentioned, we got a western snowy plover. We've had really active habitat management for the snowy plover species in Oregon for about the past, I would say, 2 decades. And because of this management that we've had, so we have a really good coordination that's set up between the aquarium, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the Forest Service. We all work together on these processes so that essentially they'll go out, check the nest, you know, check the site, see what's going on out there. And when they do find an animal that is either abandoned, sometimes we'll get chicks that come in. We most recently saw a female that was about 4 years old. She had a broken wing. But this is such an important individual because this female had actually mothered chicks pretty much every year. And so that one individual, if we're able to rehabilitate it and release it back into the wild, that makes such a difference for that population. It's really, you know, these rare seabirds, and then I would say also the sea turtles as well.
Yeah.
One issue that we have come up a lot is, you know, Oregon's a really popular place for marine mammals. So whether that's sea lions, harbor seals, whales, we also have very strict laws concerning, you know, whether or not we can interfere in these cases. And so it's hard because we're actually, for marine mammals, we can interfere in cases of human-caused suffering. So One example is just this week there was a sea lion that has been entangled in fishing line, and so it was digging into its neck pretty deeply. And so now we're working on a pretty large case to try to trap the sea lion, you know, get to the animal, take off the string, treat the wound, and then release it again. So, you know, every animal case is different, and we have to have different strategies for it.
Indeed. We're talking with Sally Compton, who is the communications and marketing manager at the Oregon Coast Aquarium in Newport, Oregon. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about the specific challenges and programming that are happening there along these coastal waters. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. We've been talking with Sally Compton, who is the communications and marketing manager at the Oregon Coast Aquarium, which, look, I've never been there, but now I cannot wait to go because it looks like such a cool and special place. They're doing a lot of really, really cool things. You know, here in the Midwest, we've got our Great Lakes, and so we're not unfamiliar with coasts and shorelines, but on the West Coast, there's some very, very unique considerations to be made with ocean wildlife. And so Sally's been talking with us about those. And so, you know, I think one thing that's come up a lot as we've been digging into this topic throughout the night is getting people used to the idea that, hey, you know, things have changed a little bit. And, you know, our aquariums and our zoos are these places that can help lead a lot of conservation efforts and a lot of educational resources. And it seems that there at Oregon Coast Aquarium, you do a lot to start that message pretty young, with getting young people involved in the organization. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that.
Definitely. So we have a lot of different kinds of educational programs that we do on site. So whether that's field trips or school groups or lab programs, we actually have a really fun program where students and scout troops can come sleep over at the aquarium. And, you know, they do a bunch of different educational activities, scavenger hunts, and then they're actually able to sleep in our, we have a series of underwater tunnels, and so they can sleep in there. And this is just really great, you know, early exposure to how many different really cool animals that we have here on the Oregon coast. But then, you know, also we really try to include as much conservation-based messaging in these programs as possible. One thing about Oregon is that, you know, we're not, a lot of communities here are not necessarily what you would think of as urban. So I know you guys are in Chicago, but we have Portland. But then outside of that, you know, a lot of schools and students are in really rural areas, so they don't have access to a lot of great educational resources. It's really hard for them to make it to the Oregon Zoo or to the Oregon Coast Aquarium. And so we've actually had a program where we take our aquarium van, we pack up all these different biofacts and, you know, really cool. We have a giant blow-up whale, and we'll drive across the entire Pacific Northwest and bring the aquarium to these different schools. It's a grant-based program, so it's extremely discounted. So it's really great for schools that can't afford to make the trip out to the coast. And, you know, a lot of the kids that we're seeing, they've actually never seen the ocean before. Even though the Oregon coast, you know, it's a whole side of the state. There's that whole eastern side. There's Idaho. Sometimes we're even going to Washington. We're going south to California, and we're visiting all these schools. And so it's really great to see the impact that this has. We get a lot of feedback from these schools, and we'll actually continuing visiting them annually, visiting them every year. And it's been really great for the aquarium, and then also for the state of Oregon and the entire Pacific Northwest as a whole, I think.
I'm sure that sounds like such a fun road trip to go on and talk about that kind of stuff with young people. Very fun.
Yeah.
So when, you know, in the bigger picture, whether you're talking about, you know, interacting with students or adults or the two kinds of visitors that you were talking about earlier, what do, when in the conversation about aquatic wildlife conservation, what is the thing that you wish more people knew, or what is the thing, maybe a big misconception that you hear often?
I think that, I don't know if this is a misconception, but I think that sometimes all of the negative things that we hear, you know, the ocean is in trouble, we hear about climate change a lot. We hear about, I know they just came out with that study about biodiversity declining. I think it can get really overwhelming for people. And I feel like people can start to think, you know, there's so many issues. Where do I start? I don't think that I can make a difference. It's too late. But one thing that I've noticed is that young people tend to feel this way the least. Young people are the ones who want to make a difference. They think they can make a difference. And I think that's something that we can make a model off of and can inspire people. And so I would say that my advice is that, you know, the actions of individuals add up to enact change. And so by you making your choices, whether that's, you know, I'm going to use less single-use plastic. I know we hear about that a lot, but just reuse a reusable container, recycle, make these changes in your everyday life because they will add up. And at the end of the day, even though it's, you know, a lot of the large companies that are producing a lot of the plastic and the pollution, the companies make decisions based off of what consumers do. And if consumers change their behavior, then they'll change what they're selling and what they're doing. And I think we've seen that in a lot of companies already are starting to change their ways of doing things because they know that young people care about what they're doing and are paying attention.
Yeah, as we said earlier in the program, people, we vote with our dollars, and that speaks
right.
Very, very loudly. Well, so everybody, head to aquarium.org. I want you to definitely click around, check it out, but definitely on the education tab. There's some really neat things there. I wish that I was still in Girl Scouts because I want to go do the sleep in the deep thing and stay there overnight. That sounds so fun. I wonder if I can convince the people at the aquarium here to let me do that. Probably not, but I think it's very, very cool. So anyone in that area, I encourage you to do that if you can, because that sounds pretty, pretty cool. So thank you so much for being with us tonight, Sally Compton, the Communications and Marketing Manager at the Oregon Coast Aquarium. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right. We are going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. That does it for us. It goes by so fast.
It does.
Thank you to you, esteemed producer Vivian Manu.
You're very welcome.
Speaking of esteemed producers, esteemed producer Ro Coleman just told me something real cool. Right before, we were talking with Sally Compton from the Oregon Coast Aquarium. And she said there's a program where Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts could go and sleep in one of their underwater tunnels. And I was like, oh, I want to go sleep in the aquarium. That sounds so cool. Turns out the shed, because I joked, oh, let's see if we can get the shed to do it. The shed has such a program. It's called Sleep with the Fishes.
Oh, that's so awesome.
But you got to have a kid with you, 5 to 12 years old. So if someone could loan me their child... because I do not have any of my own. If you loan me your child, if you need me to like chaperone your Girl Scout troop or whatever, I will totally not teach them dirty words or anything terrible like that.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, shut up, David. And I will chaperone the Girl Scout troop so that we can all go sleep with the fishes at the shed. That would be so fun. Mostly I would look at the otters all night because I think otters are the cutest thing in the world. Anyway, it's been super fun this evening. We will see you back here next week. Another exciting topic.